Welcome to Charles Dickens, A Brain on Fire, a series that digs deep into the life and works of one of the greatest novelists of all time. Ciao, everyone. Today's guest is the brilliant Marzia Dati, who is a professor of English literature at Liceo Marconi High School in Carrara. As a multilingualist, Marzia's career has taken her as far afield as Moscow and Los Angeles. She also has the distinction of being the founder of the first Italian branch of the International Dickens Fellowship in her hometown of Carrara. Marzia's new book, A Sentimental Journey Through Carrara, is a visitor's guide to this remarkable town that sits at the foot of the Appian Alps as they slope their way down to the sea. These marble mountains, which envelop Carrara, gave Michelangelo the stone from which he cut the figure of his famous David. And today, if you stand in the lobby of the One World Trade Center in New York, you will see that its walls are also decorated with Carrara's unique marble. It's 1844. Dickens has embarked on a grand tour of Italy and is enjoying what he describes as that incoherent but delightful jumble in my brain, which travelers are apt to have. Keeping a journal that he would later publish as Pictures from Italy, Dickens describes his Italian notes as a series of faint reflections, mere shadows in water. The inference being that on this trip he is a mere observer. Far from it. When he reaches Carrara, he is deeply impressed with the skill of how the marble is sculpted, but he is also dismayed at how it is carried down from the mountains in carts drawn by oxen. Here, he writes, "Imagine the clumsy carts of 500 years ago being used to this hour and drawn, as they used to be 500 years ago, by oxen whose ancestors were worn to death 500 years ago, as their unhappy descendants are now in 12 months by the suffering and agony of this cruel work. In their struggling from stone to stone, with their enormous loads behind them, they die frequently upon the spot, and their passionate drivers, sometimes tumbling down in their energy, are crushed to death beneath the wheels. But it was good 500 years ago, and it must be good now, and a railroad down one of these steeps, the easiest thing in the world, would be flat blasphemy." Dickens is then struck by the contrast of seeing the stunning marble sculptures that have a serenity that hides their painful origin. Standing in one of the many studi of Carrara that afternoon, for it is a great workshop full of beautifully finished copies in marble of almost every figure, group and bust, it seemed, at first, so strange to me that those exquisite shapes, replete with grace and thought and delicate repose, should grow out of all this toil and sweat and torture. But I soon found a parallel to it, and an explanation of it in every virtue that springs up in miserable ground, and in every good thing that has its birth in sorrow and distress. Right, well, I think it is now time for us to join Marzia in Carrara.
Buongiorno.
Buongiorno.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm so excited, you know, at the idea of meeting you for the first time on the video and just to, you know, to share with you our experience with Dickens in my hometown.
I'm so excited. I think I said when I first contacted you that after the UK and America, Italy is the next country that listens to this podcast.
I'm honored.
There you go. Well, I am so glad you are speaking English and not Italian to me right now. So I'm very lucky. So no, it's all good.
I will try to do my best.
You probably understand English grammar better than I do.
I teach English in the high school.
So you definitely do then.
Yeah, English and English literature. So okay. I'm supposed to know the grammar, but you know, your language is really, really difficult.
Is it? Is it difficult?
It is. It's very difficult because it's completely different from Italian because it's a German language.
Yeah.
Our language is Latin. And for us, for the Italians, it's really difficult, the pronunciation, because, you write in a way and you read the words in another. And so for us, it's something very difficult, believe me.
Well, I really appreciate the efforts of every English-speaking Italian. So welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. I suppose my first question really is, what were the steps that led you towards Charles Dickens yourself?
So I've always loved Charles Dickens since I was a little girl. And when I studied English literature at Pisa University, Dickens was my favorite writer. So I decided to become a member of the Dickens Fellowship. And little by little, step by step, I found out that Charles Dickens was in Carrara, in my town, and he describes the marble quarry, famous all over the world, and my town, the quarrymen working in the quarries, in pictures from Italy, and then in some letters he sent to his close friend, his biographer. But my love for Dickens is very old, since my childhood.
So is Dickens commonly known, commonly read in Italy today?
Yes. Do you
right.
Yes, it is. Yes, it's very popular, very famous. In particular, David Copperfield, Hard Times, Great Expectations. So, and it is taught at school, in high school. And then A Christmas Carol is very famous, very popular in my country. Of course, reading Dickens in English for us is really, really difficult. And so some of my colleagues adopt an Italian translation. But it's, I think it's very important, just because to understand what the Victorian age was, the setting, and let me say that Dickens is often compared to a very famous Italian novelist, his contemporary, Alessandro Manzoni, who wrote the famous novel, The Betrothed.
Yes. So have you attempted to translate Dickens into Italian yourself? Have you had any other Italian translations that you like that give you something else?
Yeah, so the Italian translation of Dickens are fantastic. Yeah, also because I know the Italian translator, they are very good, excellent academics. So they translated most of his novels. I translated into Italian two of his short stories titled Traveling Abroad. They are very famous just because I'm very interested in what we call the grand tour. And I'm interested in the fact that Dickens visited Carrara, and Carrara was not a destination of the so-called grand tour. So it is Traveling Abroad is one of my translation published some years ago. Yeah.
Well, that's excellent. And Carrara does make a big impression on Dickens, doesn't it? When he goes there, describes it as picturesque and bold.
Yeah.
I love that. And I think so it has all the prettiness that he's enjoying going through places in Italy and the scenery and the sight. But there's something about the marble that's so powerful. Can you tell us more about the history and the marble of your town?
Yes, as you know, Carrara is famous all over the world for the marble, white marble, used by the most famous artists, sculptors. Michelangelo lived here just around the corner in the very center when he came to Carrara to choose the best quality for his masterpiece. But when Dickens arrived in Carrara, he was not interested in the town, which is quite pretty. It's very old. There are medieval buildings. There is a long history here in Carrara. He was shocked. I would say shocked, not impressed. So in a negative way, by our quarries, because he criticized the old system of transportation, of these big, big, big blocks, because I understand Dickens in some way, because he was coming from the industrialized England, from the Victorian England. So it was 1845. In 1851, the Great Exhibition showed, how England was the most powerful economic country in the world. So he was shocked by the fact that in our quarries, the Roman method was still used. And so he can't, accept, this fact. And he criticized the fact that animals were exploited, in particular oxen. If you read pictures from Italy, he describes the way oxen were treated by men. And so behind this, there's a deeper criticism against the Duke of Modena, because at that time, my territory was ruled by the Duke of Modena. Modena, as you know, is a beautiful town near Bologna. And he ruled this territory just to have a way out to the sea, okay, because Modena is far from the sea. But he abandoned completely this town. And Dickens was able to understand what the situation was here. It is amazing, I think.
I mean, looking at pictures in Italy overall, it's very interesting because Dickens is a contradiction, I think, himself. So he's in love with Italy and then he gets cross with certain things. And then he forgets that he was cross and talks about how he's going to miss it all the time when he goes back to England. I think that's a kind of travel experience, I think, that a lot of people can relate to, because I think we all know what it feels like to go on holiday and look back and think, oh, that was amazing. But at the time, there are things that are difficult.
Yeah.
When he first arrives in Genoa, he says, "I was set down in a rank, dull, weedy courtyard attached to a kind of pink jail and was told I lived there."
Yeah, in Albaro, nice place.
Yeah, but also, and inside, he says about all the chairs are immovable and the sofa weighs a ton. And you know, that because he was such a control freak, that what he did when he got there was try and change all the furniture around and couldn't.
Yes. And you can feel his criticism against my country. And I think that's the main responsible for this kind of backwardness was Catholic Church, Roman Catholic Church. And so he arrived in Italy in 1845, when Italy was still divided up in many different states. So he stopped in Carrara on his journey to Rome. And so he had to pass through different states with different money and different rules, different rulers. So to him was something, strange, I think, like for every Englishman visiting my country in those times, So
yes, it is strange. Is it strange to you being Italian? Because certainly from a British perspective, I think of Italy, you think of ancient Rome.
Yeah.
And then you think of the Renaissance. And when you think of the Renaissance, you don't think of Italy being separate states, principalities and dukedoms at all. I mean, I know they were, but it doesn't occur to me anyway to think of it that way.
Yes, I know, because from your perspective, Italy is perceived in a different way. But until 1861, it was divided up in many, many different states. And for example, I say Carrara was never a part of the Grand Duchy of Tuscany, for example. Okay. So nothing to do with Florence. Can you believe that? And for example, the Milan region and Veneto, which is a region where Venice, of course, and Verona were under the rule of the Austrians.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. He talks about Swiss soldiers being in a lot. Were they
exactly?
Are they mercenaries? Are they hired by dukes? And
Yeah. It was a nightmare. But after 1861, so at last Italy was a united country, but with a lot of problems. Yeah.
You know, though, from reading what Dickens says about Britain, that he doesn't just criticize Italy, does he? He definitely criticizes the ways of England and London and all of that. Yeah. Wherever he goes. But what I love about that is at the start of the book, he says that he's not going to really go into all of that. He's not going to talk about the politics than he starts to a little bit. Yeah. But what I do find interesting, and I think this is why travel is obviously so important, he has ideas about Catholicism and preconception from a very anglicized viewpoint.
Of course. Yeah.
But then he is impressed by Catholics that he meets as well. I mean, some he doesn't think very much of, but then suddenly he comes across this friar, doesn't he? I think.
Yeah.
That he really admires.
Yeah. But he was also impressed by what he saw in Rome. At that time, the Vatican Kingdom, as we say in Italian, is a Stato Pontificio, was huge. It was huge because it reached the Adriatic Sea. So from the Tyrrhenian Sea to the Adriatic Sea. And so he was really impressed. And he describes in every detail what he saw in Rome. Yeah. But the friars he met in Genoa, for example, I think it's a very funny description of these members of the clergy and of the Italian church. Yeah.
Is there anything in particular that attracts you, but also other Italian people, perhaps, to Dickens as an English writer? Is there something common between Italian character or English character, you think?
So what attracts the Italians is a narrative. His characters, of course, because just to mention Oliver Twist, David Copperfield, very popular in this country. But what attracts most is narrative. He uses a lot of digression when he writes. And this kind of narrative is very close to Italian narrative.
Right.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
It's incredible. When we read Dickens at our branch, because every year we choose, of course, a novel by Dickens, and we read in Italian for those who can't speak English, and then in English. And so what they appreciate, as far as I can see, is the way he writes and how he depicts the Victorian society and the way he creates this his characters. In particular, we play a lot on his talking names, because like Grant Grind, and we work a lot on this. And our members and the people who attend our meetings enjoy it so much. So not only the plot, the setting and the characters, but they are attracted by his narrative. Yeah. The way he writes is fantastic, superb.
He's the most famous Victorian possibly in the world, but yet he's somehow more fun, I think, than a lot of Victorian writers, perhaps.
Yes, of course. But at the same time, there's always a message. There's always a kind of criticism. And so that's what I like most, personally. Yeah.
Yes.
And there are some themes which are very contemporary. For example, this year we are reading A Tale of Two Cities, which is not very popular and very famous in Italy. The average Italian reader doesn't know it. So for us, it was very important to propose the reading of this. And we stopped in particular on the first chapter, because if we didn't know that it was written in the Victorian age, I think what he describes would be applicable to the contemporary world. It's incredible. In particular, the first and the second paragraph of chapter one from A Tale of Two Cities. So what we try to make what he wrote contemporary, to find something which can be linked to contemporary world.
Yes. He even says in the first paragraph, doesn't he, the time was so far like the present.
Yes.
That's obviously Dickens's present, but it's also our present as well. That,
yeah, this is what I mean.
Yeah, and that's the mark of a great writer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love A Tale of Two Cities. I think that's a great one.
I must say that I can't say it's my favorite, but I am appreciating it more than I used to do in the past.
Yes.
It's fantastic, yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
Do you know my favorite one is Hard Times?
Really? Oh, wow.
Hard Times. For example, my student, I teach in high school, and English literature is one of their major. And this year I proposed the reading of Hard Times. And we talked a lot about the idea of education described in Hard Times and our idea of education. And it was fantastic. My 18-year-old student appreciate it. Now they love it. Can you believe that? Education, particularly in this country, I know that in England, in the US, is different from Italy. Now it's just, I'm not saying it's just becoming fact, only fact, but we have to be very careful. And so we developed researches and discussions about this theme, thanks to Hard Times.
That's wonderful to hear. Yes, it's tricky, yeah, isn't it? Because obviously we need facts in the world at the moment, in the kind of fake news environment. Yeah. But at the same time, if all you think about are figures on a balance sheet, empirical facts all the time, then yeah, that's a problem as well.
Yeah. And the Hard Times is not only Coketown. And the problem, the side effect of industrialization. We know that, of course, we know that. But there's something more. We had what you call industrial revolution in a later time. But we are living now in what we call technological revolution. So we have to weigh up the pros and cons of this. And so that's why I decided to read Hard Times with my students, just to compare that industrial revolution and the present industrial revolution, because more or less they are, you know, influence affecting our lives, our behavior. We try to find some parallelism between the industrial revolution in Victorian age, the one described by Dickens in Hard Times, and the present situation.
So when you said you've loved Dickens since you were a young girl, what were the stories then that you read?
A Christmas Carol was my favorite, of course. It appealed in my imagination when I was 8 or 9 years old. And then my favorite was David Copperfield. Oh, I was in love with David in my teens, and I read it so many times. And it was David Copperfield.
David's a great character, isn't he? Because as a hero in a novel, he's full of vulnerability and insecurity. And I love that moment where he gets drunk for the first time.
And the setting, and it had a great impact on me. And also because it's a kind of a Bildungsroman. I mean, the story of this child as a child, and is, you know, his mature life. And so this is what we call Bildungsroman in literature. And so the setting, the other characters.
You studied Dickens then at university as well. Is that right?
Yes. I studied foreign languages at Pisa University. And my first language, foreign language, was English. So English literature, from old English literature to contemporary. And my second language was Russian language and literature. So I studied both languages. Yeah.
That's incredibly impressive. So you speak Russian then as well?
Oh, yes, very fluently. Just because I lived in Moscow and Petersburg for a long time, I studied there. And so, I'm quite fluent.
Do you still have friends out in St. Petersburg at the moment?
Yes, I have many, many friends in Moscow because it's my favorite city, and in Petersburg and in other cities, in Russia. Yeah. And I've got friends in Ukraine.
Are you talking to them at the moment? It must be a very, very difficult...
Now it's very difficult because I can't contact them. Mm. And if we can, we only talk about culture and exhibitions. Yeah. We don't mention anything else. Yeah.
Hard times.
Hard times for these times, as Dickens says.
Yes, absolutely.
Very hard times, yeah. But I'm very lucky because I had the possibility to know complete different culture, you know, the Western culture and the Eastern culture. It helped me a lot in my life, of course. I'm very lucky.
Yeah. And it changes your perception, doesn't it, to be in those places? A bit like Dickens in Italy, how it changed what he thought, you know, and what he thought was idleness with people lazing about in the streets in the sun. He started to like it. I now know what this is. This is
the characteristic of Southern people.
Yeah, of course. But it's so hot. What are you supposed to do in the summer? But
basking in the sun.
Yeah, of course,
Nothing.
I've spent some nice times in Italy doing that. It's so funny. But I think Italy gets inside his head, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because he talks about feeling rusty, that if he tries to think, it will make a creaking sound, which I love. Yeah. It's funny to see him kind of a spectator so much that he's not driving anything that's happening to him, which is what you normally expect when he writes about things.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
You see another side of him. Yeah.
Yes, you see another side of him. Yeah, exactly.
So you studied Dickens at Pisa, and I love that it's Pisa as well, because obviously Dickens goes to Pisa in Italian Notes, doesn't he?
Yes, he went to Pisa, So of course, then he stopped in Leghorn, where Tobias Smollett is buried. And in Pisa and Leghorn, there was a very big community of English and Americans, as we say, and everything on his way to Rome.
Yes. Is there something about the effect, do you think, of Carrara on visitors? Because in your book, your sentimental journey through Carrara has lots of poetry in it from writers who have lived and visited.
Yeah.
But there's that Emily Dickinson poem, I've Dropped My Brain.
Yes. Can you believe that Emily Dickinson never traveled because she was born and lived all her life in Massachusetts, in her native town? But she quotes Carrara. The difference between, for example, Ruskin or Ezra Pound and Ferlinghetti, Lawrence Ferlinghetti or Aldous Huxley, because they were here. Okay.
Yes.
Probably she knew Carrara because of its marble and all the most famous Renaissance artists were here. I repeat, Michelangelo, Canova, Antonio Canova. And probably Carrara in this poem is related to the idea of marble. Marble is cold like death. And since death is one of her most important character in all her poems, so she associated the idea of Carrara with coldness, with death. Okay, but it's amazing that she quoted our town.
From so far away in Massachusetts,
So far away without, I mean, she had never been here, so.
Yeah, so get a feeling that in popular imagination, Carrara holds you somehow and takes over.
Yeah.
It takes over your head, or you're taken out of the driver's seat, perhaps, of your life a little bit, if you're a visitor or you're imagining it.
Yeah, just to give you an example, I have traveled a lot all my life. And when I was asked, where are you from? And I said, Carrara. Everybody knows where Carrara is, because in the imagination of people in the world, Carrara is marble, the main destination of the most relevant and eminent artists of all times. That's why.
Carrara is the obvious place then to establish the Italian branch of the Dickens Fellowship.
Yeah.
So how did you do this?
So, you know, Carrara is not Florence, is not Milan, is not Rome, Genoa. But Carrara was an international town in the past due to the marble trade. There was a British consulate here and a U.S. consulate, okay? So I think that the Dickens Fellowship here makes sense because through our activities, first of all, we try to connect world writer like a global writer, let me say this, like Dickens, in our territory. So we are trying to do what Bauman, the famous sociologist, say about localization, to make global what is local. And so Carrara, its history, its ties with the English-speaking world, and Dickens, between our town and the world. This is our idea of the branch, but we're not English because most of the branches in the world are in the UK and US. We are the first in Italy. When I started attending the council meeting in London, the international conferences organized by Central Dickens Fellowship, I was in Aberdeen, I was in Bristol, I was in Chicago with the Dickens Fellowship. They proposed us to open up a branch in Italy because in Italy there was no branch. And so I gathered some friends who love Dickens, some colleagues, and so our journey started in 2013, but we were recognized as an official branch of the Dickens Central Dickens Fellowship in 2016. Okay. We are working on an exhibition about a very famous native playwright and translator. He was born in 1873 and he died in 1968. And he adapted one of the Dickens' Christmas Carol for the theater, for the Italian theater, The Cricket on the Hearth. And yes, okay. It was a great success and is considered the best translator of Shakespeare's complete works. Can you believe? He was born here. And now we are trying to organize an exhibition with his manuscript about his relation to the English literature. It will be a permanent exhibition in the premises of the Dickens Fellowship because he is well known. His name was Cesare Vico Lodovici. He's very famous in Italy as a playwright, but not a translator from English into Italian. He translated T.S. Eliot and Eugene O'Neill and many, many others. So the Dickens Fellowship will host this permanent exhibition dedicated to him. We are working very hard because all his archive is kept in Genoa. And so we have to commute with my collaborators to Genova to study, to take pictures of the manuscripts. But what we found there is theory on translations. And so translation is not easy, in particular from English into Italian.
Yes, because you mentioned the stories that you translated of Dickens. What were the rules of that for yourself? How did you do that?
When I translate, and in the case of Dickens, I can't translate word by word because I have to respect the Italian language. But what I always try to do is to be faithful.
Yes. Well, I've learned that only from doing adaptations of Dickens, that if you're too careful, you hold on too tight to the work, it never quite works as strongly, does it? You can't be frightened of the material that you're handling. How does the Italian sentence structure differ then from English?
Okay, Dickens' narrative, as I said at the beginning of our talk, is very similar to Italian. So there's a main clause and then many, many other clause, repetition, figure of speech, a lot of them. And so for us, it's not difficult to translate him. It's difficult to translate other writers because you use a shorter paragraph, shorter sentence. And for us, we are not very pragmatic, okay? And very simple. We are very wordy, I mean, Italian speakers. And so sometimes it's very difficult to translate short sentence or two clauses, very short together. Whereas Dickens for us is much better because his way of writing is like ours.
The fullness and the musicality of it. Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah.
Yes, his repetition, how he plays with words. This is fantastic. And so I try to respect this. I don't want to be a traitor of his ideas and of his wonderful English language, but it's very difficult.
Do you plan to do any more translations? Are there other Dickens stories or novels?
Yes, I've planned some of them, but it would be a surprise.
It would be a surprise, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because I wondered about the chimes because of Genoa and the bells. And
yes, fantastic, I love it.
But it's interesting. It's interesting you say about Italian being a very full, not very economical language, because I always imagined that Latin itself is quite... Well, I think Latin is famous for being very succinct. And
So
it's interesting in the story of Italian speech, how it bloomed, how it enlarged over time.
Yes, it enlarged. It enlarged from Dante onwards, Petrarca, Dante, our great writers. Yeah, and Latin is, as we say, a very logic language. And yes, he still studied at school, for example, in the high school where I teach, which is a scientific school. Can you believe that? They study Latin from the first grade to the fifth grade because it helps logic. Yeah. Like philosophy. And so it's a wonderful language. And I'm very happy that in some, most school is still compulsory in this country.
Yeah, well, you'll be pleased. I studied Latin when I was very, very small.
Oh, really?
When I was very little at school, yeah. We had that compulsory for a couple of years. I don't remember it because it was a long time ago. But it's it's interesting, though, isn't it, as how useful it is still, though, and because... You think of Shakespeare going to school in Stratford, he would have studied Latin so much. In fact, possibly more than Latin scholars today. Just as a child, he would have soaked up all of that.
Yeah.
And then that gives perhaps the focus to longer, richer, imaginative prose.
Yeah.
If you have Latin as a foundation under it, I wonder.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Oh, Matsu, this has been so wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I hope that everything I said is clear.
Oh, it's very clear. Clear as a bell. No editing required. It's excellent.
Thank you.
It's always the way that very often people speak English better when it's not their first language. Whereas English people, we don't study grammar in England. We don't study our own grammar. So we're all over the place.
Yeah.
Which can be inventive and fun and exciting. But other times you get lost. It's only when you learn another language you understand what a noun is.
Yeah.
You know, or a verb or a adverb or clauses, tenses.
In all times when I attended high school, I studied Latin. I also took an exam of Latin literature at university. Latin was more popular than it is today. And English, foreign languages, in general, we're taught like Latin. So we learned a lot of your grammar rules, and we used to translate from English into Italian, from Italian into English. Now things have changed, of course, because English is a communicative language, in particular for us, because Italian is not spoken all over the world. And so we need, you know, to develop communicative skills. But in old times, it was considered like Latin. That's why we studied a lot of grammar.
Yes. It's good to know that happens, that goes on. Let's hope the UK brings it back, bring back its own grammar. But no, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And come to Carrara to visit.
Yes, please. Yes, I'd love to. I'd love to.
So thank you. I will show you all the places.
I will. And I'll bring my own copy. I've got it here. There you are.
Fantastic. Bye-bye.
Lots of love. Bye now.
Lots of love.
Grazie per l'attenzione to Charles Dickens' A Brain on Fire. I want to keep adverts off this podcast, so if you're enjoying these episodes and would like to make a small donation, please follow the link in the description wherever you're listening to this, and you can buy us a coffee. All contributions make a huge difference. This week I'd like to thank someone who wishes to remain anonymous, but I know who you are, and I'm so grateful to you. Thank you. See you all next time.